Welcome to Recruiting Your Volunteer Dream Team. How you doing? Give her a hand. We're excited getting this recorded so that way we can spread it to others. So I'm Jonathan McKee. I'm glad to be here. Thanks so much for coming to this workshop. We've got two workshops today, and we've got an hour each, so hold on. We're going to be moving fast. Sorry if we're interpreting in some other languages. I always feel sorry for the interpreters trying to keep up with me. I talk three times as fast as most people. So I will try my best to do what we can, but we're excited about this. And let me just start off by saying, I tell you, the question we get all the time when it comes to this whole thing with recruiting and managing and keeping volunteers, I kind of get this question about, okay, what's the secret? What's the secret? And I, of course, return with a question saying, well, tell me what you do. And it's funny because I always will hear all the different, you know, ways that people are trying to recruit. No, well, we announce it in the church service. We put it out in a mailing. And I hear all these different things. And you know what? I thought, let's just start and let me just share the secret right off the bat. This is the secret to getting more volunteers. Okay, ready? Here it is. Right here. This is it. This is the big money answer right here. Ask people. Ask them. That is the secret. I promise you, that is the secret. Ask. And people don't do this. I'm telling you, people don't do this. I have done sessions where I will then meet with people afterwards and they'll start talking about all the elaborate schemes they have to create, you know, elaborate video announcements and all these, you know, skits and you name it, all this stuff. And I sometimes am just asking, I'm saying, okay, think about the people you'd like working for. I mean, honestly, think about this. Who are they? And then I ask them, I say, have you ever walked up to them and asked them? Have you ever asked who you actually wanted to be working with you? And the answer I get over 90% of the time is, well, no, see, you don't understand. Listen, I've done this. And believe it or not, it works. So let's dive into what this actually looks like. And I'm going to start because I am an expert on what doesn't work. As a matter of fact, most of the lessons I have learned have been because I have messed up. So most of my lessons are like the seven sins of recruiting or something like that. Matter of fact, in our book, The New Breed of Volunteers, we actually put in the seven sins of recruiting. But I'm going to share right now what I call the four epic fails of recruiting. And these are the ones that are done all the time. And trust me, this is not how we do it. And number one is expecting announcements to get volunteers. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying don't use announcements. I'm just saying if all we got is announcements, we're making a mistake. We should not expect announcements to get volunteers. And let me just, you know, reiterate, ask. We need to be asking. It's funny. If you go to Google and you search images for volunteering, you will see all kinds of images with hands being raised and people volunteering. And honestly, I mean, what's wrong with this picture? The thing is, today's new breed of volunteer doesn't like to raise their hand. They don't like to volunteer. But guess what? They like to be asked. So I tell you, when we're working with this new breed of volunteer, these quality volunteers we want, don't expect announcements to get volunteers. Announcements are marketing. Recruiting is asking. It's okay to market. Guess what? I've seen some amazing videos that really highlight ministries and highlight organizations and get people kind of exposed to, hey, I could do that. That's great. But all of a sudden for them, that personal, I could do that. Well, I don't know. They might not want me. And very often, the people we want to volunteer are kind of scared. And I got to tell you, honestly, every time I've raised my hand and volunteered, it hasn't necessarily been a good situation. They're kind of like, oh yeah, okay, put your name here, get in line. And I don't feel appreciated. So I volunteer. I've got three kids, okay? They're now 19, 21, and 23. I think that makes me old. I'm not sure. But the thing is, so they're out of the house. But let me tell you, when we were like, you know, elementary school constantly, we need parent volunteers. We need volunteers. We'd get these emails, right? We'd get the flyers. We need volunteers. And whenever I volunteered for something like that, I ended up never using my gifts for something. I ended up in a corner stapling papers or something like that, you know, and not doing something I wanted to do. And so people are scared to even raise their hands. But if we notice that somebody's good at something, and man, hey, I notice that you are fantastic at making presentations. You are fantastic at leading. You are fantastic at managing. Could you use your gifts for this specific? We need to ask. And if you ask, I mean, honestly, just giving announcements, it's a major fail. So let's talk about number two. When we do finally ask, the problem we do is very often we ask for marriage instead of a date. And may all the single people in the house tell me, that don't work, right? You know, let me tell you, it doesn't, trust me, okay? All the married people in the house tell me, it don't work, it doesn't work, all right? We've tried it, it doesn't work. You don't walk up to somebody and go, hi, my name's Jonathan, will you marry me? You know, no, come on. You know, that's not how you do this. But that's how we do it with our volunteers. We walk up to someone going down the hallway at church and we're like, by the way, are you free every Wednesday night? And also this weekend for a big training, and we also need a blood test, and you'll go through a screening, and we'll, you know, and they're kind of like, you know, and they're running away from us. You know, let's think about this like dating, okay? It's the dating process. And think about that first ask should be the first date. The first date is a time where, for example, you give them a taste. Let me tell you what that looked like in youth ministry. In youth ministry, I had all kinds of opportunities where I could give them a taste of what was going on and how God could basically use them to impact the lives of young people. We had this outreach going on with a couple hundred kids in a gymnasium at a school on Wednesday nights. And it was a fun outreach. And what I realized through doing it wrong was that when I walked up to people and said, hey, are you free every Wednesday night? And by the way, we've got this training retreat, and we've got the, and I named all the stuff, they were like overwhelmed. Oh, whoa, yeah, I'm busy. I got a job. I've got obligations. But if I walked up to someone, like I walked up to my friend Jenny, said, Jenny, this coming Wednesday night, I need someone to scoop ice cream. We got a couple hundred kids coming out to this root beer float night. We're gonna present the gospel. It's gonna be awesome. Could you help us this Wednesday night? Guess what? Young people love to, and I say young people specifically, I'm gonna also call them the episodic volunteer, okay? Young people are looking for a single opportunity to go in and make a difference. You know, we see this not just in ministry, we see this in organizations. If organizations can plan an opportunity where this Saturday we're going to be planting hundreds of trees, who'd like to come help plant trees this Saturday? Organizations will have tons of people coming out. But if you're like, every Saturday we're looking for someone, nobody comes, you know? And so what you're looking for is you're looking for that first date. There's numbers behind this. 79% of non-volunteers said they would volunteer if given a short duration task. Think about that. What are some of the short duration tasks you could ask them? What are some of the first dates that you could ask them to be involved where they'll get a taste? Current trends suggest many of America's charities and volunteer associations may have taken this reality to heart and have made shorter, more flexible volunteering opportunities available to these episodic volunteers. We need to find opportunities to give people a taste. When I asked this girl, Jenny, true story, to come and scoop ice cream, she gladly said yes. And it was fun because at this particular night, I had about 20 volunteers there. They were busy doing what they're doing, and I was able to work the room. And this is important if you're a recruiter of volunteers. And I went around and I was working the room, and teenagers were there, and I went over to Jenny and I said, Jenny, thanks so much for being here. This is so awesome. I mean, and she was like scooping ice cream. She was busy. She's like, this is cool. Do all these kids come here all the time? And she's just asking me question after question. I'm like, yeah. I said, as a matter of fact, let me tell you about some. See that kid over there? His name is Tim. Let me tell you about when we pick him up every week. And I started telling stories of kids' lives. I started telling stories of changed lives. And she's like, wow, you do this every week? I'm like, yeah, thanks so much for your help. I didn't even ask for a second date. I just, I played hard to get. Okay? I was just like, thanks so much for your help. And she was coming, and she's like, and all these other volunteers, they help? Yeah, they help every week. Thanks a lot, Jenny. You know, boom, you just, and she's like, she was almost kind of like, well, can't I? You know, I mean, she was hoping to find out more. I was giving her a taste. Now, see, here's the thing. This is a dating process. How many of you guys have ever recruited a volunteer that you regretted you recruited? How many of you, they're sitting right next to you? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. But you've recruited that volunteer, and also, and I've done that. I was desperate, I needed help, and I kind of let the process go a little too quick, didn't screen like I should have, and I got that volunteer I didn't want. Sadly, many people share story after story of when they send announcements out, they get these very draining people that volunteer over and over again that are not the people you want, but they're the people signing up for this stuff because they've got nothing else to do, you know? Because nobody wants to be around them, you know? And the thing that's hard is sometimes we'll get a volunteer like that, and the thing that's nice about a dating process is, I'll tell you something, when I work with young people, I'm very meticulous about who's going to work with young people. We have background checks, we have all kinds of stuff where we want people making really good decisions. We want to put positive mentors in the lives of young people. And so this is a dating process. So very often part of this process is I'm observing if they're a good fit. This is a two-way thing. I'm watching how Jenny is with kids. And as I'm watching, and by the way, the reason I asked Jenny is because I knew she would be, but I'm watching her in that situation. And I've invited people out and I saw the way they were with kids. And I was like, hey, thank you so much for your help. And they're like, yeah, do you do this all the time? I'm like, yep, we do. Thank you. I appreciate it. Goodbye. You know, and you're not stuck. Because you didn't recruit, you just recruited them for one night and they served their purpose and thanks, that's great. But if you did your job well and you got somebody good in there, then start thinking about a second date. And that's what I actually did at the end of the night with Jenny. I was like, this is a lot of fun. I said, you know what? You should come back next week and just take a peek because this was kind of a special event. You should see what it's like next week because we're running small groups and I'd love you to sit in and just hear what we do. It'd be fun. So I didn't again say, are you free every Wednesday night? No, I didn't scare her away. I was just like, you should come back and check it on a normal week. I bet you'd enjoy it. And she said, yes. That was a second date. And a second date, she did that. And then we actually went out with her, me and one of my volunteers, Michelle. We went out with Jenny and we sat there and we talked and we had a conversation. And in that conversation, I was able to actually listen to Jenny's heart and find out what she was about, because one of the things we always want to do is we want to find out someone's gifts and get them using those gifts. So this all of a sudden was an opportunity where, as I listened and I thought maybe she might be a good fit, I was actually saying, hey, here's what kind of looking for. We're really looking for small group leaders. You were fantastic in that fall group, small group tonight. Tell me what you think about this. And we talked about that and she sounded interesting. So we said, hey, I'll tell you what. Why don't you come back next week again and let's look at what this looks like again. And so we just kept one date at a time. This is the dating process. By the way, on those, eventually we shared kind of the roles and responsibilities. Probably about the third date, we said, hey, I just want you to know, Jenny, every one of our volunteers, we're very picky with our volunteers. And I tell you, I'm excited about you coming along. We've got some paperwork, we've got to do a background check, we do this kind of stuff, just these formalities, but that's because we value this position so importantly and we want you to know everything about it. And you know, so, and we actually shared what this was like and what kind of the responsibilities were. We didn't share those first date. We waited, and as soon as we found out she was a good fit and she was kind of excited, she was interested in more, then we showed her what it was all like. And we shared those roles and responsibilities. It's funny how I've seen this process work various times. My daughter used this process with my dad on an Africa trip. My daughter was going to go to Uganda with our church. And she walked up to my dad. My daughter's on the far right, and my dad a second to the right. She walks up, she says, Papa, I'm going to Uganda, and I'd like you to go with me. Well, come on, grandparents, how do you say no to that, right? Your high school granddaughter says, come to Africa with me. And she says, no, seriously, Papa, there's pastors there, and we go in these villages, and we're going to be teaching, and you're such a good teacher. My dad was a pastor for so many years, great teacher. She goes, it would be awesome to have you. I'd love you to come and teach. And I already talked to Paul about it. He said he thought it would be good, so I'm asking you. And my papa couldn't say no. I mean, you know, my dad couldn't say no to his little adorable little granddaughter. So he says, absolutely. And it was funny, B, because for her, she was just saying, come to this one trip. It was a big trip. It's Africa. It was 2 weeks. It's a long journey from California, you know. But he said, absolutely. Guess what? He's now done 5 trips. We keep returning back and back. I'm going again here in a couple, because she went to grandpa first, but then she went to me. She eventually slummed for dad. You know, she finally got me, you know, and I'm going back here at the end of June again, back to Kampala. And it's so fun because my dad and I have actually gone in, we've trained youth workers, we've trained pastors, all those. Why? Because my daughter asked Papa on a first date. So don't make the mistake of asking for marriage instead of a date. Most common mistake I see when it comes to recruiting. Number three, the third fail that I see made all the time is assuming that no means never. In youth ministry, I walked up to a girl by the name of Julie, and I asked Julie if she would help because I thought she would be great. And using my own, you know, point and principle that I just taught with you, which is ask, I went and I asked and I said, hey, would you help this Wednesday night? And she's like, sure. And then kind of went through the dating process, and I was trying to recruit her and her husband, Matt. And really when it got down to it, she finally said, you know, Jonathan, this is really fun. I was glad to help out once, but we're just so busy right now. And she had two kids that were finishing high school. She was running people everywhere. One of them still didn't drive, so she was taking them there. She herself was a teacher. She was so slammed, she said no. 2 years later, I remember that youth worker, because I was a volunteer, he said, oh no, we already asked them, and they said no. I said, is there a chance that she didn't say no, that she was just saying not now? No doesn't always mean never. No can mean not now. And sure enough, that's exactly what she meant, because we asked her 2 years later, and her oldest kid was off to college. Her youngest was now a senior in high school, drove by himself, and you know how seniors in high school are. They're never around anyway, you know. And all of a sudden, she switched schools, and she was at an easier position where she had all this time, and she gladly said yes. But sometimes we think, oh, I already asked this person. They said no. No does not always mean never. Remember that. And the last one I want to share with you is overlooking the bookend generations. Very often, especially we're talking about, you know, I mean, this is Child Evangelism Fellowship. We're talking about young people here. And when it comes to specifically people that are working with children, that are working with tweens, that are working with teenagers, very often we target that parent, right? That parent age group. And sometimes in certain organizations, like schools, do this all the time. They hit that parent because they can kind of make it mandatory, right? I remember when we joined swimming, it was mandatory as a parent to go and work the swim meets. Oh, it was awful. You know, you had to. So that was their target, was the parents. And very often, I see ministries overlook the bookend generations. That is the generation younger than the parents and the generation older than the parents. I'm talking about millennials. I'm talking about boomers, okay? I'm talking about 20-somethings in college, you know, not quite their own family yet. I'm talking about grandma and grandpa. Fantastic volunteers for youth ministry. Let's talk about this younger generation for a second. I get brought in a lot to talk about millennials because everybody's up in arms trying to figure out this millennial generation, these 20-somethings, okay? And most people are asking, are these millennials even worth it, you know? And I see some millennials here in the room. We're going to talk about you right now. We're going to talk about you. Because it's interesting how often we try to put things on the millennials that sometimes we were doing when we were their age. So we got to realize there's generational difference and there is life stage differences. And volunteer availability is often driven by life stage. Let me explain. My friend Brandon came up and he said, Jonathan, I don't like recruiting you old people. He called me old. I was like, let's wrestle right now. Let's see who's old, all right? You know, he was like, he called me old. He goes, yeah, you old people, you're always so busy. So I don't like to recruit you old people. I only want to recruit you. And he called me an Xer. That's what I am, Gen X, okay? He says, you Xers, you guys aren't good volunteers. Gen Y, the millennials, are much better volunteers. And I said, I beg to differ. I think it's just our life stage. Us Xers right now are already volunteering because we have to at our kids' swim meet. We have to at our kids' school. We're running kids everywhere. And honestly, when people ask us to volunteer, the answer is usually not now. It's not no, it's not now. And interestingly enough, when I was in my 20s, I was a great volunteer. And now that my kids are out of the house, I'm a great volunteer. But I tell you, when you're raising young people, it's tough. I know, I do parent workshops all the time, and parents come back to my table, and they're missing hair, and they're just like, you could just see it in their face, parents of teenagers, that they need, like, all, you know, to be in serious, you know, help, okay? Because, I mean, you could just see that they're, what they're going through at the time, you know? It's rough. It's a rough stage. The fact is, millennials, what's a great life stage at the time. As a matter of fact, millennials, a little more about them. They're born between 1982 and 1994. You will see people referring to today's teenagers as millennials. Some people are using an expanded definition, but this is pretty much the original numbers that most of the people who really study millennials will use right there. And if you think of some of the common famous millennials out there in Hollywood and in the sports world, there's some of them right there. As you can tell, all of them are incredible role models. But it's interesting because a lot of organizations are saying, are millennials worth it? I mean, should we use them? And it's interesting because a lot of people are saying, okay, wait a second, it's tough because they're flaky, this kinds of stuff. But no matter who's blogging about millennials and whether or not you should use them, we got to realize about 10,000 millennials turn 21 every day in America right now, and actually it's moving now to 22, 23. They're getting older. There are already well over 40 million millennials in the workforce right now. They are actually the largest generation of workforce. As a matter of fact, if you go on my Amazon page right now, there's a brand new book I just wrote with my friend Kurt, and we're writing about how do you manage millennials in the workplace. It's called Can I Have Your Attention? Managing leaders when they can't stop staring at their little devices. These very devices that we're hoping will make them more efficient are actually distracting them from work, So a lot of people are asking these questions. Are millennials worth it? And the answer that most people are coming up with is absolutely yes, but we're making some tweaks. Because, for example, if you hand millennials a paper application, they'll be like, wait, you don't have an online application? And so a lot of people are starting to learn, hey, guess what? Maybe we could bring our organization a little more up to date, and this is actually a good thing. And millennials are actually driving us to be a little more efficient and do some of this. And some people are pretty resistant to these changes. But I myself will personally tell you, I think they're not only unique for sure, but they're definitely worth it because I've never met a generation that wants to make an impact more. The younger generation, these 20-somethings, have grown up supporting causes. And as a matter of fact, the majority of them, 3/4 of students, high school and college, have at least one cause they support or are involved with. They not only donate their time, but they also give money. And it's funny because some people are critical. Like, for example, here's a group of young people that decided that when it comes to college, I went to my daughter's graduation last week, and she said, hey, I'll take you to the Dining Commons. She attends a Christian school on the coast there, Westmont College in Santa Barbara. And we went down there, and she took her dining card, and she swiped us through because she had so many meals left over from that month because she hadn't eaten all her meals. Well, a bunch of millennials got together and said, hey, every month we have leftover meals that mom and dad bought. And wouldn't it be neat to donate these meals that mom and dad bought? So how generous. So they thought, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? So they actually talked to the Dining Commons, and they said, what if we could take our leftover swipes and donate it and have it in food and then give it out to homeless people? And so it's funny, like I said, some people are kind of critical and like, oh yeah, well, it's pretty easy to give away mom and dad's money, But the thing is, a lot of people are describing it. For example, this guy who's an expert in millennial age group, Dave Giles, he said this. He said, I would describe millennials as passion, not paycheck. There are a lot of millennials out there that would actually, and I'll even show you some data on it, would actually choose a better job that had less pay if they could help with volunteering and doing something they care about. Here, MTV does a bunch of research on this, and they like to research young people so they can mess them up. And what they do is they actually vary their research about millennials. They want to know everything about them. They said that loving what I do always outranks salary and a big bonus. Half millennials would rather have no job than a job they hate. A typical boomer, so we're looking at 50 and 60-somethings, response is, give me my objectives and get out of the way. Typical millennial response is, I need flexibility, respect, and snacks. So millennial generation, a fun generation to work with. Some of the quotes I hear from millennials, I like my job, but I love my life. Gen Y, these millennials don't want a job. They want a life that hopefully includes a job. The thing about millennials is we're finding that even though many people are saying they're narcissistic, they're not loyal, most people are showing that millennials actually are team players and they would like a mentor. And by the way, we'll be talking a lot about mentoring in my next session here too. This is so great because many of them would like a coach. Millennials said that they want to enjoy their work. They want to enjoy their workplace. They want to make friends in their workplace. They said, as a matter of fact, worry if your millennial employees aren't laughing, going out with workplace friends for lunch, and helping plan the next company event or committee. Help your long-term employees make room for the millennials. This is what experts are saying in Fortune 500 companies, that millennials are actually becoming more flexible than many of the older employees. And they're given examples of anything from prefer working at home versus the office. Millennials compared to older employees are rating way better. As a matter of fact, and this is a study that Coldwell Banker did, we're seeing all kinds of stuff where basically millennials are proving to be quite flexible. But there's something else that people complain about millennials. It's that they always have something in their hand. And I'll be the first to tell you that this device is changing everything. But this isn't just millennials. The highest social media users are 25 through 52-year-olds. 25 through 52-year-olds. Yeah, they're beating out teenagers. And this device is changing everything. And I'm going to go into a little bit more in my next workshop about connecting with overconnected kids. But let me just give you one example, because some people are saying, Jonathan, is it really that different? Realize this device, a guy came out 10 years ago with a name you recognize, and he stood on a certain stage, and he held up a phone, and he said, this invention is going to change everything. That was in 2007 that Steve Jobs gave that famous speech. Fast forward 5 years later to 2012, now over 50% of America had one of those devices in their pocket, over 50%. Now, 12 through 17-year-olds alone, over 80% have them in their pocket. And it's changing everything. It's changing the way they talk, the way they communicate, everything. Let me give you one example. The selfie. Okay? The average millennial takes 9 selfies a week, spending 7 minutes on average perfecting each one. That's 54 hours of selfies each year. That's 25,700 selfies in their lifetime, all on this little device that they're carrying with them. So I'm going to dive into that a little bit more in my next workshop, Connecting with Overconnected Young People. There's a quick commercial for that workshop, because young people are growing up with these devices in their hands. And they're learning what being liked is. And sadly, most research out there is showing that this is having repercussions. And honestly, the country's trying to figure this out, because it's something that's less than 5 years old than of young people carrying this. I'm actually going to ask this question in that workshop. What age is the sweet spot right now for mobile phone use? Would you say it's 8 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, 14 years old, or none? They all use pagers still. What do you think? I'm going to ask that question next time. And we're going to look a little bit at social media, because when it comes to the young people we're trying to reach out, social media is huge. But here's an interesting question. I'm going to ask this one too. How old do kids need to be on Snapchat, Instagram, or Facebook? 8 years old, 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old, 13 years old? I'm going to answer that in that workshop. How's that for a shameless plug for a workshop? That's the next one. Back to recruiting our volunteer dream team. You guys, so often we make these common mistakes, and including ignoring the bookend generations, ignoring retiring boomers who are great volunteers. And I would love to spend more time, this is an hour-long workshop, talking specifically about boomers as well. I encourage you to jump on my Amazon page and grab my book, The New Breed, because we spend an entire chapter on boomers, inspired chapter on millennials. So we talk specifically about recruiting those age groups. But so don't make those four mistakes. Don't overlook that generation. Now, some of you are like, Jonathan, enough with how not to do it. What's it actually look like? Tell me what this process looks like. Glad you asked. Let's look at four steps to actually recruit volunteers in. What does this look like? Number one, and this is the most important, and it's scriptural, pray. And I'm not just throwing that up there like the way that sometimes when you sit down for the family meal and somebody barks out, you know, everybody starts eating and somebody goes, no. We're supposed to pray. We're supposed to pray, right? You get that one person. Oh, everybody drops their forks. Okay. Bless us bunch as we munch on our lunch. Okay, boom. And then they go pray. I'm not talking about that. That's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about the fact that when Jesus himself was looking across the crowds, and he saw that many of us recognize that passage of where he was moved with compassion because he saw that they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. But a lot of us forget about what he then said, because he turns to his disciples and he says, the harvest is plentiful and the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send workers to his harvest field. And I don't want you to raise your hand. I just want you to ask yourself, have you done that? Have you done that? Have you specifically got on your knees and said, God, you see the ministry we're doing. You see the impact that you've got an opportunity to make. And guess what? You told me to go and do this. You said go. I did. Here I am. And please send me workers. And a lot of us, we skip that process. Especially those of us who are type A, very organized, right? We immediately go to, oh, okay, I got these tools, right? Jonathan gave me tools about asking. Okay, I'm going to start making a list and this and that. And we're like, oh, that's right. I should pray. God, help us through this process. Okay, good. Here we go. Right? You know? And we kind of forget this. But this is where it all starts. It starts with putting it on the perspective that it should be, that we're lucky to be in on this process. Here's the thing. God doesn't really even need us in on this. But for some reason, he allowed us to be in on this process, and he thought it would be important for us to be in this process. So he said, I'll tell you what, go and make disciples. And he's involving us because he knows that it's going to impact us as much as those that we're reaching out to. He wants us to be involved in this. So don't forget the big picture, that he could do this without us. And anything that happens is going to be through him anyway. And we're just going to be used like a tool for him. And so what an awesome thing to just put it back on and say, okay, God, here I am. I'm ready to be used. Help me, you know, and start right there. And then I'll tell you what, I even pray and I usually pull out a piece of paper and I do this step two right here. I list my dream team. I'm old school. I pull out something that looks like that. How many of you guys actually still use something like that? Yeah, there we go. I get a pen and paper. I actually get out wet ink. There we go. And I decide to write it down. Okay, I use a Bic, but it's okay. You know, you buy a pen. But anyway, so I get one of those out, and I just start going, okay, God, who are the people that I know that would be fantastic at, and if I'm in youth ministry, fantastic at working with teenagers, and I start listing out the people I know that I think would be fantastic, okay? You know, Bill, Kristen, Zeke, who's obviously a redneck, and then Benny, and you know, and whatever, and I just start listing them down. And then I'll tell you what, this is brainstorming. So no idea is bad. We're not committing to anything. So write down anybody at this point. I mean, just, whatever. Just brainstorm who you think might be good. We can cross them off the list later. Because some people are like, oh, they'll say no. They'll say no. Don't do that at this stage. You're brainstorming. You're writing this down. I mean, no idea is bad. I mean, you just write it down. You never know. Just write it down, you know? You know? Billy Graham's not 100 yet. Write him down. You know? You're in double digits, you can volunteer. Here we go. You know, write it down. So list your dream team. I tell you, I can't tell you how many times that I've, and story after story, and I'm trying to watch time because I want to have enough time to talk about everything, but I remember a time where my boss came to me and I kind of switched roles. I used to work for Youth for Christ, and we worked on campus with a bunch of different organizations. By the way, Billy, that's where he got his start, Youth for Christ. And we were doing a campus ministry, and I was running a bunch of junior high programs, and somebody left, and he needed me to start this campus ministry, and literally my boss said, hey, I need you to take over this. I'm like, well, how many volunteers are there? It's like, two. I'm like, well, how many kids are there? 200. I'm like, that's a bad ratio. That's not 1 to 100. That's not good. That's I probably need more volunteers. And he literally handed me the folder and he said, there you go. Go for it. Go. And I'm like, wow. And I'm like, when does it start? 3 weeks. I'm like, I got a lot of work to do. And I pulled out, I mean, I tell you, my wife and I, we prayed so hard and we're like, give us names. And I pull out one of those yellow pads. And I started writing down, I wish I would have kept it because I could see that yellow pad. And I remember the people I wrote down. I remember some of the names. That was when I wrote Jenny's name down. I remember when I wrote Christy's name down. I remember when I wrote. And it was interesting because it just started with me listing, here's the people that I know who would be fantastic. Are they busy? Yes. Are they even involved in some other things? Absolutely, yes. Does that keep me from writing on the list? No, not at all. I listed my dream team out. I listed them out, put them on there. And then guess what? Don't make an announcement. Don't make a creative video. Ask them. Ask them on a first date. Look for that first date opportunity. And if we have to, something, we do this as an all-day workshop. And one thing I like to do is I get organizations to divide up. And I say, okay, what are your short-term projects that you could use as first dates? What are those opportunities where people come out and they get an opportunity to get a taste of what's going on? For me, I shared someone scooping ice cream. You know, I said there's lots of venues where I see organizations. We teach this with governmental organizations. We train people at AARP. And sometimes it's picking up trash or whatever. And it's like, hey, on this Saturday, we're going to be doing this. find those short-term projects to attract that episodic volunteer. Because you got to realize there's something happening right now in America, and it's what I call slacktivism. Slacktivism. It's kind of like activism, but not so much, okay? I'll define it. The ultimate feel-good that comes from the desire to get back to society without actually getting one's hands dirty, okay? All right, that's slacktivism. Sign an internet petition, put a ribbon sticker on your car, buy an album and help Japan, buy a wristband, reply to text to donate $5, post an issue-oriented YouTube video. And again, people come out as critics and say, that's so stupid, that's not real. But let me just tell you something. While churches were sitting on their hands, I know I'm not gonna be popular for saying this, so go ahead, get mad at me now. Go ahead, get the anger out, here it comes. Ready? Lady Gaga raised millions by selling wristbands for Japan. While we were all sitting around figuring out, this was back in 2011. The American Red Cross, okay, good, now you like me again. American Red Cross, Haiti campaign, raised money so fast, phone companies could barely keep up. Phone companies receiving up to 10,000 Haiti texts per second. Those $10 pledges by text amounted to over $5 million for American Red Cross. So it's amazing how very often these little tiny attracting the slacktivist, I know that slacktivism exists. I know that some people don't want to donate week after week after week or donate their time. Look at those as opportunities for first dates. Look at those as opportunities to give them a taste of what God is doing through our ministry. So, first dates, develop short-term projects. An example, we were training at an organization for Dovia in Sacramento, and somebody shared there from the Shriners Hospital in Sacramento that we said, come up with some of these examples. And I love the one they came up with. They had an orphanage, sadly, that burned down in Mexico. And so they sent out tweets to all their followers, and they said, this weekend, we need help. One of our orphanages burned down. Kids literally are living on the street. We need to get this place up. We need it now. We're looking for contractors, everything. And they sent out a mass tweet because they didn't have time to call everybody. And people started to call in. Then they started to call some of the people they know. Hey, will you help us? They actually, contractors they knew, construction companies, they start saying, we need your help. We don't have the money to do this, but we got to get down there because kids are on the streets. And guess what? People kept saying yes, 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 because they were asking for a short-term event. So start thinking about those little episodic events and what those look like that would get people there and having such a great time that they're like, this was awesome. I'd like to do this again. Well, let's sit down and talk about that on our second date, right? You know, don't say that, that's a little creepy. But anyway, so ask them on the first date. Number four, transition episodic volunteers to committed volunteers. And that's where you look for those opportunities for those second dates. You look for opportunities to talk to them more about what's going on, to invite them back again. But it's an old sales principle. Don't go for the sale, go for the appointment. A first date is an appointment. Just get the appointment. Don't try to make the sale. And once you get them there and they see what God is doing, it gives you an opportunity to screen them. It gives them an opportunity to say, hey, could God use me here? And so look for that dating process. Four steps to actually recruiting your volunteer dream team. But let's talk about keeping. I want to spend some time here. We're going super quick. We only got 20 minutes left, but I want to spend a little bit of time on keeping and training here. So let's talk about keeping your volunteers, and then we'll throw out some quick ideas here. And then I've got some other ideas out there in some books as well that I can refer you to, which, by the way, a bunch of them already sold out before the session. I'm so sorry. I should have brought more books. Didn't know. But we can jump on Amazon.com, so I'll show you where those are. Keeping volunteers. The first thing I want to share with you when it comes to keeping volunteers is, I'm sorry, I don't have any quick fixes for you. I promise you, keeping volunteers takes time. It takes time. Yeah, I can't tell you, all you gotta do is this one quick little thing and your volunteers, no. Sadly, keeping volunteers is like most of ministry, and it's full of face-to-face interactions. It's full of us getting face-to-face with our volunteers and building into them. And but it's okay though, there's some math behind it. Let's do the math. Let's say, right now, if you were in youth ministry, for example, and you spent 20 hours weekly with kids, okay? If you're spending 20 hours, you alone, as a lone ranger, are out there spending 20 hours weekly with kids. How much output is being spent with kids? You're spending 24 hours, it equals 20 hours with kids. Let's talk about what happens when we start to bring in volunteers. Let's say you dropped your time spent with kids in half, and now you only spend 10 hours a week with kids, plus 10 hours with 10 adults that you've recruited. So picture this. You personally cut your time in half, and you realize, I am going to now spend 10 hours building into my 10 adults. That can look like all kinds of different things. I'll give you some ideas. But just look at the math really quick. If each of these 10 adults spend 5 hours a week, and when I used to recruit my volunteers, I'd say, hey, do you got 5 hours a week? This is about date number three that we talked about this. Do you have 5 hours a week you can spend with kids? Well, now 20 hours equals 60 hours. Because you've got your 10, and you've got 10 volunteers each doing five. They're 50 plus your 10, boom, 60 hours, and you're spending the same 20 hours. My friend Greg used to sit at a Denny's. We're talking really classic breakfast place here. Very expensive, very expensive. And there's one right down the street you can try. You can get like breakfast for $3. But he used to sit at Denny's on Tuesday mornings from 5:30 a.m. till 10 a.m. and he would bring sermon prep and all this different stuff. And he told his volunteers, hey guys, my Tuesday mornings are completely for you. And if you show up, you get free breakfast. Well, all the millennials were there. I mean, they were definitely on the free breakfast. Hey, I don't live in mom's anymore. So they would show up and order big, you know, stuff like that. But he just had all these volunteers rolling in there all the time. And it was just kind of an open office time for volunteers where they come and get free breakfast. And he used that time. Sometimes there was big gaps because he had like guys that were construction that were there at that 5 a.m. or 5:30 a.m. shift. He had, you know, the millennials that showed up at 9 a.m. I keep looking at you, millennial. This is fun. I'm just having a great time with you. But anyway, so, you know, they would show up at 9 a.m., you know, 3 minutes after they got up. And, but that was his time. That was his time hanging out with him. And that's what it takes. It takes time. It takes time meeting with him. If we have a volunteer and we just set him loose and never check with him or whatever, chances are they aren't going to last. And a big part of keeping volunteers is building into them and mentoring them. There's an example of this in your Bible. His name was Jesus. And if you look, he spent a lot of time with his disciples. He did. He built into them for 3 years. And look what they did. Well, 11 out of 12. Not bad for a Messiah. So the thing is, there's also communication. And communication is important. And believe it or not, we now have this little tool in our hand that we need to kind of maybe learn how to use. Especially if I'm telling you to recruit millennials. Only 14% of millennials actually even use a landline each day. And that number is growing on 2.5 years old now. Growing on 3 years old. Millennials, a lot of millennials are not using landlines. And as for messages, don't leave them a message. Text them. Matter of fact, a lot of millennials will even tell you, hey, so-and-so, don't even bother leaving a message because I never checked this, so just text me. You know. And so we need to realize when it comes to communicating, maybe even be like, you know, United Airlines or Hilton Hotels or whatever and ask them their communication preference. Should I email, text, Facebook, carrier pigeon, what, you know, whatever works. You know, how do we connect and find out from them what they're best, because we're going to work with some people who are like, hey, I want to be, you know, talk to me, call. If you want to talk to me, don't send me one of them texts. I want you to pick up the phone and talk to me. We need to know that. So find out how they like to be communicated with. And guess what? Use some of your millennials and say, hey, help me improve our communication. And they'll show you all kinds of things, what you can do with Facebook groups and different things. Or they'll even tell you, we want to reach young people. Should we use Facebook? And they'll be like, no. Young people aren't on Facebook because their parents are on Facebook. Let's use Insta. And let me show you the Insta story. And and all of a sudden, you're going to find out new ways to do this. And your millennials can help you with this. So communication is key, not just in communicating with the people we're ministering to, but to the people we're ministering with. And we need to keep up ongoing communication. It's part of the time we're spending. Then there's something I call more than just a meeting. People hate meetings. People hate meetings. But if you find something that is more than just a meeting, what I like to do, for example, is I would once a month with my volunteers have them all over to my house, and we'd have a really cool spread of dinner, and we'd have a meal together, we'd hang out, we'd have fun, and then I would do a little bit of details and a little bit of training. Matter of fact, there was one time where it was perfect, where I had 12 different volunteers, and they actually told me, hey, let's rotate houses, because some of them thought, I want to host this sometime. So we had 12 volunteers, and it was neat. We would actually each take a month, and we're like, hey, we're at John's house this week. We're at Deanna's house this, you know, and once a month, we'd go to their house, and they would cover the main course, and the rest of us would kind of potluck and bring stuff. Millennials would bring a bag of chips. And then, and we would all, show up, we'd have a great time, and we'd talk, we'd interact, and we'd do a little bit of training. And we're going to talk about training. Sometimes training was as simple as, I've got a book back there called Connect, and if it was connecting with young people, I'd be like, hey, at the meeting this week, have chapter one read, and we'll talk about it. And we'd just go through the discussion questions. Or sometimes we'd go to, like, for instance, our free youth ministry website, thesourceforyouthministry.com. We always have these youth culture window articles. And we would look at that, which right now the youth culture window article is about summer movies. And now it's about actually cell phone use, parents using cell phones too much is what it's on right now. And I would say, as a matter of fact, sometimes you find that your volunteers aren't good if you give them homework. They don't read the reading they're supposed to do beforehand. So I'd take something like this, and we actually have on our website a printer-friendly button right there. I would print out our youth culture window article and say, hey, everybody, I'd hand it out. Everybody read this right now. Take 3 minutes and read this. Say, take 3 minutes and read it. And then I ask them some questions. I'm talking simple questions like, what do you think? Is the article right? How does this apply to the kids we work with? What's something you can use this week from this article? And we just do some little training like that, where now you all of a sudden don't have to come up with a training because you're just going to. By the way, we've got free training videos on the sourceforyouthministry.com. So you could pull up the video about the six types of kids and how do you reach the six types of kids. That's all on there on that, thesourceforyouthministry.com. The source, number four, youthministry.com. Or if you want the short version, thesourceforym.com. Tons of free training on that website. So we would do that at more than just a meeting. And this would achieve several purposes. It would achieve fellowship, which is awesome because you want a team build. You want your people to eat together and hang out together and grow together. Also, how many of you guys have ever noticed that sometimes your volunteers, instead of hanging out with, like, let's say you're working with young people and you've got volunteers, how many times do you show up and your volunteers are all talking with each other and not with the young people, right? Because they want to hang out with each other. Give them that opportunity. If you never give them that opportunity, it's hard to say, shh, stop talking to each other. Go hang out with kids. You know, you can't do that because they're like, gosh, I never get to see this person. I want to catch up. Give them that opportunity to catch up once a month where you have a meal together and they get to bond and they get to hang out together. I also like to provide perks. And this isn't necessarily a big budget item. Sometimes this could be something as simple as, like t-shirts and fun stuff, or Christmas, giving them a fun Christmas gift. And you can even make them learning gifts. You can buy them each a book. You know, like if you're going to have them go through a book, say, hey, I got this new book about connecting with young people. Boom, give them each that book, Connect. Give them a Starbucks card. But here's another fun thing about perks. Think, what do you want to accomplish in your ministry, and what perks can you give them that would encourage them and be fun as they accomplish that ministry? I'll give you an example. When I worked for Youth for Christ, we didn't have a large budget at all. But I would go to a rich cousin I had by the name of Mike, and I'd say, Mike, I want 10 $50 Starbucks cards for my volunteers, and here's why. My volunteers are hanging out with kids, and the best time, the most ministry happens when they're out talking one-on-one with kids in like a place like a Starbucks. So I want to give them each a Starbucks card, and the rule I give them is they just need me to bring me back a receipt and write down what the name of the kid that they met with on there. So I give my volunteers, I'm like, here you go, $50 Starbucks. This is to be used for your time with kids. And they were like, yeah, you know? And they would go, with Starbucks, and I'd say, try to keep it to under 10, try not to, do the whole lunch, just get a coffee, get two drinks, And it was fun because usually a $50 Starbucks card meant five different meetings with young people. So it was a perk they got. I did this on trips. We had this one trip, this week-long trip down in Southern California where it was kind of this fun camp for the week. And I gave my volunteers cash, and I gave them $5 bills for every one of their small group kids. So they had an envelope full of $5 bills, and I said, bring me back a receipt with the kid's name on it. I said, I don't even care about the accounting. I just want to know what kid you went out with. So they would go, and they would take a kid for a milkshake. They would take a kid for a Jamba. They'd take whatever. And I didn't want my volunteers in any way to have any excuse of why they're not meeting with kids. I was giving them the money to go out and do that with each one of their kids in their small groups. So offer perks. Another perk, by the way, I'll give you the opposite of it, is I worked for a volunteer. I volunteered at a church where every event they did, this leader would always go, "Oh, and you know, budget's tight, so I know we're going this weekend to snow trip. I need you guys to pay your own way because, you know, money's tight. So please think of it as a donation. God bless you. Please do it." And my wife and I, we were poor. We were dirt poor. And we were trying to volunteer in ministry. And it got to, honestly, after a year of serving, we're like, we can't afford this money. Forget time. We can't afford this money anymore. I never did that to my volunteers. This is just good budgeting. If you're taking kids to an amusement park that costs 10 bucks, charge the kids 12 and cover your volunteers. Or take them, a lot of these amusement parks want adult chaperones, and they'll actually, for every 7 kids, allow one chaperone free or whatever. Do whatever budgeting you have. And if you're really curious more about this, I have a book all about programming that is, what's it called? Getting Students to Show Up. And I talk about all this and how to budget so that you cover your adult leaders. Important principle, because you don't want your adult leaders saying, "Man, I can't even afford financially to serve God and do this because I'm constantly being tapped for $250 for a weekend retreat. I can't do this." And I didn't like volunteering for someone who wasn't good at bookkeeping and having to spend all the time, spend this. So I made sure I didn't do that with my volunteers. I made sure that I always made it free for them because I wanted to make it very easy for them to do ministry. And I wanted to give them the perks to be able to do that. I also once a year like to have a leadership retreat. And this was great bonding time, great fellowship. This was a time where I built into them, and I'm going to mention this again as we talk about training of volunteers, but a leadership retreat. And I tried to do this very cheap. My cousin had this ranch that was 900 acres, and he had cows and horses and ATVs and all this fun stuff. And he would let me go up there for free and stay at this bunkhouse. So the location was free. It cost me food and gas to get there. And we would go. We'd have a great weekend. Throughout the weekend, I'd have each of the volunteers go around and each spend a time. We kind of did a sharing time where they gave like a 5-minute. I said, "Give me your story," where they kind of gave their testimonies. A lot of tears, a lot of getting to know each other, and a lot of fun. And I tell you what. If you bond with a team like that, I had 3 sets of volunteers that ended up, they were single, and they ended up getting married. Lots of best friends out of that kind of stuff, because I constantly gave them opportunities to bond with each other. We need to be proactive about keeping our volunteers. So many people put so much effort into recruiting, and they were like, "All right, we got them. Now let's keep recruiting." We need to put effort into keeping our volunteers. One part of keeping is, and I said we'd talk about this, training them. So let me give some training methods you can do yourself, of which of these 5 methods, there's one that's kind of not really yourself, but I'm warning you because it's, you could bring somebody else in. But still, here's 5 methods you can do yourself. And yes, you can book a speaker yourself. So that's how it works. So look at number 1 right here. Number 1 is article book discussion. I already alluded to that. And that is simple. If you're sitting there going, "I don't know how to train my volunteers. What am I supposed to tell my volunteers?" Find a current article or a book or something that's relevant to the kids you're working with. If you've got kids, that if you've got leaders that want to connect with young people, that book Connect that I got on the back table is a great one. If you're saying, "Hey, we're working with young people who can't stop staring at their devices," this is a book I wrote about that very topic. How do you connect with young people that can't stop staring at their devices? Maybe you give them that and you say, "Okay, you guys, read some of these this week and let's talk about that in our next meeting." Hand them a book, hand them an article, and discuss it. Number 2, skill sharpening. And skill sharpening is finding something specific to the type of ministry you do. And again, if it's connecting with young people, maybe it's finding a training that you can use that would teach them how to connect with young people. I, at workshops like this, I constantly will do leadership trainings like Connect or leading small groups. Don't be afraid to, here's the budget item, I said you could do this yourself, take your volunteers to events like this. Don't be afraid to take your volunteers to, if you work with teenagers, something like a youth specialties event, an Orange event, Willow Creek event, Saddleback event. You know, I mean, there's events you could take them to where they will learn some of these skills that they need to use for your ministry. And you probably have an idea of what those skills are that they need to learn. But it's okay to bring in a trainer. It's okay to take them to a conference. These are good budget items. And I tell you something, sometimes it's so neat because when you bring them to someone else, They might be saying the same thing you've been saying all along, but your leaders will be like, oh, he said this. And you're like, I've said that 30 times. But they finally listened because it was Andy Stanley, not you. You know, so it's okay to, and sometimes you can even buy a video of a training or something if you can't afford to bring all your leaders to a conference. So it's important to sharpen those skills. The debrief is a surprisingly good training, and that is, my daughter and I were just talking because she did an internship for a ministry last summer, and she said sometimes they do this event, and she just felt like, oh, there were so many problems, and then they'd go, what do you do? And then they would just do the next one, and I said, well, did they ever do a debrief? She's like, what's a debrief? So it's just like going somewhere afterwards and talking and saying, okay, what went right? What went wrong? What can we improve next time? What's something that we tonight thought, oh, if I only would have, and we start writing these things down. I tell you, I learned so much through trial and error, sadly, because we couldn't afford a lot of good training. And the key is that you write this stuff down. I would constantly pull stuff down after a trip. We'd go, what were the problems here? We had this kid get in trouble here. This kid gets sent home. We had this problem with a staff member. And I start writing this down. I'm like, well, what can we do to prevent that? Well, we need to have a better way of counting kids before they get on the bus. We need to do better with making, you know, kids, staff be with kids instead of talking with each other. And you write these things down and then you incorporate it in your training. But it all starts with a debrief. What went right? What went wrong? So don't be scared to use a debrief. Debrief, very helpful piece of training you can do. Number four, big picture planning. You know that once a year retreat? At that once a year retreat, I very often would be like, okay, you guys, what's our goals for this year? And we'd honestly go through some of the big goals. And we would say, okay, and we'd maybe lay out our calendar and do some of the big stuff. Once a year, big picture planning. And this was a great time for them to see what this was, where are we heading towards, why are we doing what we're doing. So many ministries don't do this. It's so good to do some big picture planning. And by the way, you can bring in, I constantly will come in and do a big picture planning with, you know, why do we do what we do, what activities do we do to get us there, and a lot of people will do that kind of training for you. And I do that, and I mentioned that I was going to say it again, and that is sometimes I do that big picture training at a leadership retreat. Leadership retreat, find someone who's got a cabin, a place you can use for free. It'll cost you gas, it'll cost you food, and it's a fantastic way to train people yourself. If you want, I encourage you, jump onto my website, my blog, jonathanmckeewrites.com. I constantly write about all kinds of stuff when it comes to parenting and working with young people. I also brought some books at the back table. A couple of them have already sold out, so don't be afraid to jump on Amazon. Amazon's great. I love it when you jump on Amazon. But I've got some of these back here, so let me tell you, here's the ones I have. I have Connect, which is all about connecting with today's young people. This is the manual on how do we as adults connect with young people. Great one to put in the hands of your volunteers. This is a book I wrote for parents, but youth workers buy this all the time because the book is, hey, how do we connect with the generation of young people who are always staring at screens? So this is all about how do we find venues to connect with young people. This is a book with over 1,000 questions that gets young people talking. Over 1,000 questions in this book, Get Your Teenager Talking. And in the book that I just sadly sold out of, but I encourage you to jump on Amazon, is The New Breed. And this is, if you want to know about what we talked about today, it was so fast, you're like, Jonathan, you talk so fast. I would love to learn more. Jump on Amazon, grab that, The New Breed. It's the number one selling book on volunteerism on Amazon right now. I have that pack for $40. But since I'm out of New Breeds, if you want, you can still buy the pack for just $30 without the New Breed book. And that will save you a bunch of money. I got a couple books for young people. This title scares some people. But let me tell you what this book is. This book right here is a fictional story of three teenagers surviving in a post-apocalyptic world. And in every situation they get into, mom and dad isn't standing over their shoulder telling them what to do. So the question they keep asking is, what is right? And then it goes to discussion questions and scripture. This book is just our daily bread for teenagers. That's all it is. It's story, scripture, questions. My friend Greg's a pastor. He goes, this is the only devotional I can actually get my kids to read. So it's just kind of a teen devotional. I've got one specifically for guys too, called The Guy's Guide to God, Girls, and the Phone in Your Pocket. That's also on Amazon. It's a best-selling devotional right now on Amazon, actually, in its categories. Number one is category. It is just a very in-your-face book to guys about being a man of God and what that looks like. Discussion questions, great thing for men to go through with young men. So I've got that back there. I've got those packs just for $20. I don't have this one anymore, so I won't even show it to you, but it's on my Amazon page. It's the Skinny Volunteers. If you're, I'm not a strong reader, but that's the Reader's Digest version. That book is like $6 on Amazon. It's called The Skinny on Volunteers. So I've got that pack back there. I encourage you to come back. I was giving that away, but sorry, to the first dozen, but I can't believe we sold out beforehand. My next session is going to be connecting with overconnected young people. If you're curious about that, that'll be here. If you're curious about bringing me out to your church, I do parent workshops, parenting the smartphone generation, connecting with your smartphone-obsessed kid. You guys, this has been Recruiting Your Volunteer Dream Team. Let me close in prayer, and I'll be back there at the back table and to answer any of your questions. Lord God, thank you so much for these workers. God, the harvest is... You just look out there. I'm overwhelmed where the harvest is so plentiful and the workers are so few. God, I praise you for the workers in this room. And I commission them, Lord God, as they go out, that they would depend on you to just bring them people alongside them, workers for the harvest. God, let it be the people you choose, not the people we choose. You got to be in charge. It's so obvious how much we need you in this process. Thank you for letting us be in this process. God, we give this all to you. We give you all the honor and glory. We pray this in your precious name. All God's people said.
Amen.
I'll be at the back table. Thanks you guys so much.